Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the Murder Tape Chronicles. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Crimson Staircase, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, A House Full of Shadows. I first saw Carrington Manor on a fog-drenched morning, the air damp and cold, clinging to my skin like an unwelcome touch. It was Lucas's idea, this house, his legacy, he'd called it. I had envisioned something grand, picturesque even. Instead, what loomed before us was a hulking corpse of a building, its once pristine stone walls stained by time and weather. The gardens that surrounded it were a chaotic sprawl of overgrown hedges and skeletal trees, their bare branches reaching toward the sky like accusing fingers. "This is it?" I asked, my voice tight with disbelief. Lucas didn't answer immediately. He kept his eyes on the driveway ahead, his grip on the steering wheel tightening until his knuckles turned white. "This is it," he finally said, his tone clipped. He didn't look at me, not even when the car came to a stop in front of the rusted iron gates. They were slightly ajar, creaking faintly in the breeze. The sound set my teeth on edge. I stepped out of the car and felt the crunch of gravel beneath my boots. The air was colder here, heavier. It wrapped around me like an invisible shroud. My gaze was drawn upward, to the tall, narrow windows of the manor. They stared back at me, dark and lifeless. For a fleeting moment, I could have sworn I saw movement, a shadow passing behind one of the curtains. But when I blinked, it was gone. Lucas was already at the trunk, pulling out our luggage. "It's just a house," he muttered, almost to himself. "Nothing to be afraid of." I wasn't so sure. The front doors were massive, carved from dark wood, their surface scarred by deep grooves. Lucas unlocked them with a heavy key, and the sound echoed ominously in the silence. As the doors creaked open, a rush of cold air greeted us, carrying with it the scent of damp wood and something metallic, something I couldn't quite place. The foyer was cavernous, its high ceiling adorned with a chandelier that looked ready to collapse under the weight of its own decay. Dust coated every surface, muting what must have once been opulence. The staircase dominated the room, its wooden steps warped with age. My eyes were drawn to it immediately, though I couldn't explain why. "It's beautiful," I lied, trying to keep the tremor out of my voice. Lucas shot me a glance, his expression unreadable. "It needs work," he said. "But it'll feel like home soon enough." "Home." The word felt wrong in my mouth as I repeated it silently. We spent the rest of the day unpacking and exploring the manor. Lucas seemed more at ease now, his earlier tension replaced by an almost manic energy. He talked about renovations, about restoring the house to its former glory. But as he spoke, I noticed the way his eyes avoided certain parts of the house, the locked doors, the darkened corners. By the time night fell, I was exhausted. The manor was too large, too cold, and too quiet. The silence felt alive, pressing against my ears, filling the spaces between our words. Lucas had gone to bed early, leaving me alone in the sitting room with a glass of wine and a book I couldn't bring myself to read. That was when I heard it. The sound was faint at first, almost imperceptible, a soft creak, like footsteps on wooden stairs. I froze, my heart hammering in my chest. "Lucas!" I called out, my voice barely above a whisper. There was no answer. The creaking continued, growing louder, closer. My eyes darted to the staircase, and that was when I saw it, a dark stain spreading across the fifth step, glistening in the dim light. Blood! I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. The stain grew larger, thicker, until it began to drip, pooling on the step below. The air around me grew colder, the metallic scent I'd noticed earlier now overwhelming. "Amelia!" Lucas's voice shattered the silence. I turned sharply, the wine glass slipping from my hand and shattering on the floor. He stood in the doorway, his face pale, his eyes wide. "There's blood," I stammered, pointing to the staircase. "On the stairs." Lucas's gaze followed my finger, but his expression didn't change. "There's nothing there," he said flatly. I blinked, my breath hitching. The blood was gone. "No," I insisted, my voice rising. "It was there, I saw it." "Amelia." His tone was sharp, almost angry. "You're imagining things. You're tired. Go to bed." He turned and walked away without another word, leaving me alone in the suffocating silence. I didn't sleep that night. Every creak of the floorboards, every whisper of the wind, set my nerves on edge. I lay awake, staring at the ceiling, replaying the events of the evening in my mind. Had I imagined it? Was Lucas right? The next morning, I woke to find him already dressed, his suitcase by the door. "I have to go into town for a few days," he said, avoiding my gaze. "There's something I need to take care of." "What about the house?" I asked, my voice tinged with unease. He hesitated, his hand resting on the doorknob. "You'll be fine," he said. "Mrs. Eldridge will be here if you need anything." With that, he was gone, leaving me alone in the house. That night, the blood returned. This time, I was prepared. I sat in the darkened foyer, my flashlight in hand, waiting. When the creaking began, my pulse quickened. The sound was unmistakable now, footsteps slow and deliberate, ascending the staircase. The blood appeared on the fifth step, spreading like a living thing. My flashlight beam caught it, the red glistening in the light. I reached out with trembling fingers, and the moment my hand touched the stain, the air around me seemed to explode. A scream, high-pitched guttural, pierced the silence, reverberating through the house. I stumbled back, my heart pounding, my ears ringing. The blood vanished before my eyes, leaving no trace. In the suffocating silence that followed, a single thought took root in my mind. I wasn't alone in this house. Chapter 2, Whispers in the Walls. When Lucas left, the silence grew heavier, more oppressive. Without him here to fill the space with idle conversation or his quick, dismissive remarks about my overactive imagination, the house felt alive. Every creak of the floorboards, every groan of the old wood, felt deliberate, like the house was shifting, watching, waiting. I spent most of that morning pacing the halls, my nerves frayed. The fifth step on the staircase taunted me, perfectly clean and innocent in the light of day. But I knew what I'd seen. I couldn't let it go. The housekeeper, Mrs. Eldridge, arrived just before noon. She was an odd woman, thin and angular, with pale, weathered skin and eyes that seemed to look through you rather than at you. Her presence didn't comfort me. If anything, it added to the unease. "Good morning, Mrs. Carrington," she said in a voice as dry as parchment. Her hands were folded neatly in front of her, her expression unreadable. "How are you settling in?" I hesitated, unsure of how much to reveal. "The house is interesting," I said carefully. "There's so much history here." Her lips twitched, almost a smile, but not quite. "Yes, history," she echoed. "This house has seen much over the years." She turned her attention to dusting the mantel, and I couldn't help but press further. "Do you know anything about the previous owners?" I asked, trying to sound casual. Her hands stilled just for a moment. Then she resumed her work. "The Carrington family has always owned this manor," she said, her tone carefully neutral. "It's been passed down through generations. But what about the people who lived here?" I persisted. "There must be stories." She set down her duster and turned to face me, her expression grave. "Some stories are better left untold, Mrs. Carrington," she said softly. "This house has a way of holding on to its secrets. It's best not to dig too deep." Her words sent a chill down my spine, but I wasn't ready to let it go. "What about the staircase?" I asked. "Have you ever seen anything strange there?" Her eyes flicked to the staircase, then back to me. For the first time, she looked genuinely unsettled. "No," she said quickly. "I've never seen anything like that." She left the room before I could ask anything else. That night, I dreamed of blood. It seeped through the walls, dripped from the ceiling, and pooled at my feet. In my dream, I was standing at the top of the staircase, staring down at the fifth step. The stain grew larger and larger until it overflowed, pouring down the stairs like a crimson river. I could hear screaming, faint, distant, and agonized. When I woke, my heart was pounding, my skin slick with sweat. The room was dark and silent, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't alone. I got up and grabbed the flashlight from the bedside table. My hands were trembling, but I forced myself to move. I had to see the staircase. The house was deathly quiet as I made my way down the hallway. The beam of the flashlight wavered as I walked, casting shadows that seemed to shift and writhe. When I reached the staircase, I froze. The blood was there, fresh and glistening, spreading across the fifth step. But this time it didn't stop. It dripped onto the step below, then the next, and the next, until the entire staircase was slick with it. I felt sick, my stomach twisting as the metallic scent of blood filled the air. I wanted to turn away, to run back to the safety of my bedroom, but something held me there, rooted to the spot. And then I saw her. She was standing at the top of the staircase, her figure shrouded in darkness. I couldn't see her face, but I could feel her eyes on me, cold and unforgiving. She didn't move, didn't speak, but her presence was suffocating. I tried to scream, but no sound came out. The flashlight slipped from my hand, clattering to the floor. The beam flickered, casting jagged shadows across the walls. When I finally managed to tear my gaze away, she was gone. The next morning, I decided I couldn't stay silent any longer. I needed answers. The library was a cavernous room filled with towering shelves and dusty tomes. It smelled of aged paper and decay, the air thick with the weight of forgotten stories. I spent hours combing through the books, searching for anything that could shed light on the history of the house. Finally, I found it. It was a thin, leather-bound journal, hidden behind a row of encyclopedias. The cover was cracked and faded, but the name scrawled on it was unmistakable: Lucas Carrington. My hands shook as I opened it. The pages were yellowed and brittle, filled with cramped, uneven handwriting. The entries were fragmented, disjointed, but they painted a horrifying picture. "The blood won't stop," one entry read. "No matter how much I clean, it always comes back. The house won't let me forget." Another entry was more frantic. "I can hear them. At night, in the walls. They're coming for me. They want revenge." As I read, a sickening realization began to take hold. Lucas wasn't just tied to this house. He was part of its darkness. His family's history was soaked in blood, a legacy of violence and betrayal that stretched back generations. But the most chilling entry was the last: "She watches me from the staircase. I can't escape her. The house won't let me go." I closed the journal, my heart racing. I couldn't ignore the truth any longer. This wasn't just a house. It was a trap, a prison for the souls of the dead. And Lucas. Lucas was part of it. That night, the blood came again. I sat in the darkened library, clutching the journal to my chest. The house was alive with sound, the creaking of floorboards, the whisper of wind through the cracks in the walls. And then came the footsteps, slow and deliberate, descending the staircase. I forced myself to look. The woman was there again, her figure sharper, more defined. Her hair was matted with blood, her hands outstretched as if reaching for me. Her eyes, cold, hollow voids, met mine, and for a moment I couldn't breathe. Then she spoke. Her voice was low and guttural, filled with pain and rage. "Why did you come here?" I couldn't answer. My throat was dry, my body frozen with fear. She took a step closer, her bare feet leaving bloody prints on the floor. "You can't save him," she hissed. "He belongs to me now." And then she was gone, leaving only the bloodstains behind. Chapter 3: The Cycle of Death. The blood wasn't just a stain on the staircase. It was a tether, a link between the present and something older, darker. It wanted to be seen, felt, understood. And the more I saw it, the more I became consumed by its presence. The journal I'd found hinted at horrors that Lucas hadn't told me. Horrors he likely never intended to tell me. But my husband wasn't here to face my questions or my growing fear. He was gone, leaving me alone in a house that breathed death, its walls whispering secrets I wasn't sure I wanted to hear. But curiosity is a vicious thing. It sinks its teeth into you and doesn't let go, even when every instinct screams to run. That day, I dove deeper into the house's past. The library became my refuge, its towering shelves offering both answers and a false sense of safety. The more I uncovered, the more the pieces began to form a grotesque puzzle. The Carrington family was cursed, of that I was certain. The records I unearthed spoke of tragedy after tragedy, each more violent than the last. Elias Carrington, Lucas's great-grandfather, was the first to leave a bloodied mark on the house's history. His wife, Margaret, was found at the bottom of the staircase, her neck broken, her face frozen in a scream. The official report called it an accident, but the whispers in the local papers hinted at something more sinister. Then there was Thomas Carrington, Elias's son. He lived alone in the manor after Margaret's death, growing increasingly paranoid. Neighbors reported hearing screams from within the house at night. One morning, Thomas was found in the foyer, his throat slit, a bloody knife clutched in his lifeless hand. The case was ruled a suicide, but again there were whispers of shadows moving in the windows, of bloodstains that couldn't be cleaned. The pattern continued. Each generation of Carringtons met a violent end within these walls. And now Lucas had brought me here, into the heart of it. I couldn't stop shaking as I closed the dusty ledger I'd been reading. My pulse pounded in my ears, my breath shallow and quick. The walls of the library seemed to close in around me, the air heavy with the weight of centuries of violence. I needed to get out of that room, out of the house. But where would I go? My thoughts were interrupted by a sharp, rhythmic tapping. It came from above me, faint but insistent. I froze, my heart hammering. The sound grew louder, more frantic, until it was directly overhead. I didn't want to follow it. Every instinct screamed at me to stay where I was. But something else, the same insidious curiosity that had driven me this far, forced my feet to move. I grabbed the flashlight and made my way up the stairs, my hands trembling as I gripped the banister. The tapping led me to the master bedroom, our bedroom. The door creaked as I pushed it open, the sound grating in the stillness. The room was dark, the curtains drawn, but I could see something on the far wall. A shadow. No writing. I stepped closer, the beam of my flashlight shaking as it illuminated the words scrawled across the wallpaper in what looked like blood. She watches. She waits. She takes. I stumbled back, my stomach churning. The room felt colder, the shadows deeper. And then I heard it, the unmistakable sound of breathing. It was coming from the closet. Who's there? I demanded, my voice cracking. The breathing stopped. I hesitated, every nerve in my body screaming at me to run, but I couldn't leave. Not without knowing. I stepped toward the closet, each movement slow and deliberate. My hand shook as I reached for the handle. The door swung open, and I let out a strangled scream. There was nothing inside. Nothing but the journal I thought I'd left in the library. It was open to a page I hadn't seen before, the words scrawled in that same frantic handwriting. The cycle must end. Blood for blood. I didn't sleep that night. The house seemed to come alive after dark, its groans and creaks louder, more deliberate. I could feel its presence, a suffocating weight pressing down on me. And the staircase, it called to me. At midnight, I finally gave in. I wrapped a shawl around my shoulders and crept out of the bedroom, the flashlight trembling in my hand. The air in the hallway was freezing, each breath forming a small cloud of condensation. When I reached the staircase, I stopped. The blood was there, as I knew it would be, glistening in the moonlight that streamed through the windows. But this time, it wasn't confined to the fifth step. It trailed downward, pooling on the floor below. And at the bottom of the staircase stood a figure. It was a woman. Her dress was tattered and soaked in blood, her hair hanging in matted clumps around her face. She looked up at me, her hollow eyes meeting mine, and I felt a wave of nausea. "Why are you here?" she asked, her voice low and guttural. I couldn't answer. My throat was dry, my body frozen in place. She took a step toward me, her movements slow and deliberate. "You don't belong here," she hissed. "This house, it will take you like it took the others." The flashlight slipped from my hand, clattering to the floor. The beam flickered, casting jagged shadows across the walls. "Who are you?" I managed to choke out. Her expression twisted into something between a sneer and a grimace. "I was the first," she said, "and I will not be the last." She raised her hand, and I saw the knife. I stumbled back, my heart pounding. But when I looked again, she was gone. The blood remained. The next morning, I confronted Mrs. Eldridge. "You lied to me," I said, my voice shaking. "You knew about the murders, about the blood. You knew, and you said nothing." She looked at me with a mixture of pity and fear. "I warned you not to dig too deep," she said quietly. "Who is she?" I demanded. "The woman on the staircase. Who is she?" Her lips tightened, and for a moment, I thought she wouldn't answer. But then she sighed. "Margaret Carrington," she said. "Lucas's great-grandmother. She was the first to die in this house. Her death, it set everything in motion." I felt a chill run down my spine. "What do you mean?" Mrs. Eldridge hesitated. "The Carrington family is cursed," she said finally. "The house demands blood. It always has. And it always will." I stared at her, my mind racing. "And Lucas?" I whispered. "What does he have to do with this?" She didn't answer. But her silence said everything. The house wasn't just haunted. It was hungry. And I was beginning to think Lucas had fed it before. Chapter 4, Shadows of Betrayal. I woke to the sound of muffled screams. At first, I thought it was a nightmare, a remnant of the restless, violent dreams that had plagued me every night since we arrived at Carrington Manor. But as I sat up in bed, heart pounding, I realized the sound was real. It echoed faintly through the walls, twisting and contorting like a distant, anguished melody. Gripping the edge of the bed, I forced myself to listen. The screams were faint, barely more than whispers, but they were there, distinct, human, and horrifying. The house was alive again. I reached for the flashlight, which had become my constant companion, and slipped out of bed. The air in the room was icy, the kind of cold that gnawed at your bones. I pulled my shawl tighter around me and stepped into the hallway, the wooden floorboards creaking beneath my weight. The sound was louder now, coming from somewhere below. It beckoned me, pulling me toward the staircase. My heart hammered against my ribs as I descended, the flashlight's beam trembling in my grasp. When I reached the fifth step, I froze. Blood. Again. It oozed slowly from the wood, pooling on the step like an open wound. This time, the smell of iron was overpowering, so thick it made me gag. The blood trailed downward as though something or someone had been dragged across the floor. I swallowed hard, trying to steady my breathing. I knew I should turn back, wake Mrs. Eldridge, or lock myself in the bedroom until Lucas returned. But something deeper, a compulsion I couldn't resist, drew me forward. The trail led me to the parlor, where the heavy velvet curtains had been drawn shut. The room was suffocatingly dark, the only light coming from the faint moonlight that slipped through a gap in the curtains. The screams had stopped, replaced by an eerie silence that pressed against my ears. I shone the flashlight around the room, my pulse quickening when the beam landed on a figure standing in the corner. It was Lucas. He was facing the wall, his shoulders hunched, his head bowed. His hands were clasped in front of him, and they were dripping with blood. Lucas. My voice came out as a strangled whisper. He didn't move. I stepped closer, my heart pounding so hard I thought it might burst. Lucas, what are you doing? I asked, my voice trembling. He turned slowly, his movements mechanical, as though his body was being controlled by invisible strings. When his face came into view, I gasped. His eyes were vacant, staring through me rather than at me. Blood streaked his face, smeared across his cheeks and down his neck. His hands hung limply at his sides, crimson droplets falling from his fingertips and splattering onto the floor. They won't stop, he said, his voice flat and monotone. No matter what I do, they won't stop. What are you talking about? I demanded, taking a cautious step back. What have you done? His gaze finally focused on me, and for a moment I saw something human, something desperate, in his eyes. It's not me, he said, his voice breaking. It's the house. It makes me. He stopped abruptly, his head jerking to the side as though he'd heard something I couldn't. A shudder ran through his body, and he stumbled backward, his expression twisting into one of terror. She's here, he whispered. I didn't need to ask who he meant. The bloodstains, the whispers, the figure on the staircase, it all pointed to the same answer. Margaret. Before I could react, Lucas bolted out of the room, his footsteps echoing down the hallway. I hesitated for a moment, torn between chasing after him and running as far away from this cursed house as I could. But the thought of leaving him alone in this nightmare was unbearable. I followed him. The trail of blood was easy to track, leading me through the twisting hallways and into the basement. The air grew colder with every step, and the metallic stench of blood was so thick it burned my nostrils. When I reached the basement door, I hesitated. It was slightly ajar, and faint whispers seeped through the gap, low, guttural voices that didn't sound human. My hands trembled as I pushed the door open, the hinges groaning in protest. The basement was a cavernous space, its walls lined with crumbling stone and its floor slick with moisture. In the center of the room was a makeshift altar, constructed from rotting wood and draped in tattered fabric. Candles burned on either side, their flickering flames casting grotesque shadows on the walls. Lucas was kneeling before the altar, his hands pressed against the floor. Blood pooled around him, spreading outward in a macabre halo. Lucas, I said, my voice shaking. What are you doing? He didn't answer. His head was bowed, and his shoulders trembled as though he was weeping. I stepped closer, my flashlight illuminating the scene. That was when I saw it, the body. It was sprawled across the altar, its limbs twisted at unnatural angles. The face was unrecognizable, but the tattered clothing suggested it had been a woman. Blood soaked the fabric, dripping onto the floor in a steady rhythm. I stumbled backward, my stomach heaving. Oh my God, I whispered. What did you do? Lucas finally looked up, his face pale and tear-streaked. It's not me, he said again, his voice hollow. It's the house. It needs blood. If I don't feed it, it'll take you. I stared at him, my mind reeling. You're insane, I said. This isn't real. He shook his head, his expression desperate. You've seen it, he said. You know it's real. The blood, the whispers, Margaret, she's a part of it. She's the house. And now she wants you. Before I could respond, the candles flickered violently, their flames stretching toward the ceiling as though pulled by an unseen force. The whispers grew louder, rising into a cacophony of screams that echoed off the walls. Lucas's eyes widened, and he scrambled to his feet. She's here, he said, his voice trembling. Run. But I couldn't move. The air in the room was thick, pressing down on me like a physical weight. The shadows on the walls seemed to come alive, writhing and twisting into grotesque shapes. And then I saw her. Margaret. She stepped out of the darkness, her blood-soaked dress trailing behind her. Her eyes were empty voids, and her lips curled into a cruel smile as she moved toward us. Lucas grabbed my arm, pulling me toward the stairs. "We have to go," he said, his voice urgent. But Margaret was faster. She reached out, her hand closing around Lucas's wrist with inhuman strength. He cried out, his face contorted in pain as blood seeped from where her fingers dug into his skin. "Let him go!" I screamed, grabbing a broken piece of wood from the floor and swinging it at her. The makeshift weapon passed through her like smoke, and she turned her gaze to me, her smile widening. "You can't save him," she said, her voice a chilling whisper. "He's already mine." By the time I managed to drag Lucas back up the stairs, he was barely conscious. His skin was pale, and his breathing was shallow. I locked the basement door behind us, but I knew it wouldn't stop her. Nothing would. Chapter 5, The Crimson Truth. The house wouldn't let us leave. It became abundantly clear the moment I tried the front door the next morning, only to find it locked, though no key fit the lock. The windows wouldn't budge either, sealed tight as though fused to the walls. Even Lucas, pale and feverish from the events in the basement, confirmed what I'd feared. We were trapped. "She won't let you go," he murmured, his voice distant and hollow. "Not until the blood debt is paid." I wanted to scream at him to demand answers, but I knew the truth was far worse than he let on. The house had claimed him long before I ever stepped foot inside, and now it had its claws in me too. The bloodstains returned that night, darker and more sinister than ever. They spread across the staircase like veins, pulsating as though the house itself was alive. I avoided looking at them for as long as I could, but when the whispers started, soft, insistent, and in a language I didn't recognize, I found myself drawn back to the staircase. I carried the flashlight with me, gripping it so tightly my knuckles turned white. The hallway stretched endlessly in the dark, the shadows curling and shifting in the periphery of my vision. I kept my eyes on the staircase, half expecting Margaret to appear again, her blood-soaked dress dragging across the floor. When I reached the fifth step, I hesitated. The blood was thick, almost gelatinous, and the metallic scent was overwhelming. It dripped slowly, rhythmically, as though the house was bleeding. That was when I saw the first body. It lay crumpled at the base of the staircase, its limbs twisted at impossible angles. The face was mutilated beyond recognition, the flesh torn and hanging in strips. Blood pooled beneath it, soaking into the wooden floorboards. I stumbled back, my breath caught in my throat. I wanted to run, to scream, but my legs wouldn't move. Instead, I found myself stepping closer, compelled by a force I couldn't explain. The body wasn't real. I realized it the moment I reached out to touch it, and my hand passed through, like smoke. But the fear was real. The terror was visceral, clawing at my chest and suffocating me. "You see them now." The voice came from behind me, low and guttural. I spun around, the flashlight beam jerking wildly, and there she was, Margaret. She stood at the top of the staircase, her hollow eyes fixed on mine. Her dress was soaked in fresh blood, the fabric clinging to her skeletal frame. "This is what he's done," she said, her voice a venomous whisper. "This is what they've all done." I wanted to speak, to ask her what she meant, but my voice failed me. "You don't belong here," she hissed. "But he does. He was born to this house, to its hunger. And you." She took a step closer, her bloodied feet leaving dark prints on the stairs. "You're the price." I didn't remember running back to the bedroom, but suddenly I was there, slamming the door shut behind me. Lucas was sitting on the edge of the bed, his head in his hands. He didn't look up when I entered. "Lucas," I said, my voice shaking. "What the hell is going on? What have you done?" He didn't answer. I grabbed his arm, forcing him to look at me. His eyes were bloodshot, his skin clammy. "Tell me the truth," I demanded. "No more lies. No more half-truths. I need to know everything." For a moment, he just stared at me, his expression blank. Then he sighed, his shoulders slumping as though the weight of the house had finally broken him. "It's the house," he said finally. "It's always been the house. It feeds on us, on our blood, our fear, our pain. My family, we're tied to it. Bound by some curse or pact, I don't know. But it won't let us go." I felt a cold knot form in my stomach. "And the blood?" I asked. "The bodies?" "Margaret." His jaw tightened. "She was the first," he said. "Elias killed her. He pushed her down the stairs. They say it was an accident, but it wasn't. He murdered her, and that was the beginning. Her death, it awakened something in the house. Something dark. And every generation since, we've fed it, whether we meant to or not." I stared at him, my mind reeling. "And the bodies?" I asked again, my voice barely a whisper. They're real, he said, his voice breaking. The house keeps them. It hides them, but they're here. You've seen them, haven't you? I nodded, my hands trembling. I tried to stop it, he said. I thought if I brought you here, if we started fresh, maybe it would let us go. But it won't. It never does. I felt sick. My legs threatened to give out beneath me. So what now? I asked. What does it want? He looked at me, his eyes filled with a despair so deep it made my chest ache. It wants you, he said. It always takes one. That night, I couldn't sleep. I lay awake, staring at the ceiling, the whispers in the walls growing louder with every passing hour. I could feel the house closing in around me, its hunger a palpable force. At some point, I must have dozed off because when I opened my eyes, the room was bathed in an eerie red glow. The blood was here again, seeping through the walls, pooling on the floor. And Lucas was gone. I found him in the parlor, standing over another body. This one was fresh. Lucas, I whispered, my voice trembling. He turned to me slowly, his face pale, his eyes hollow. I had to, he said. It's the only way. The body at his feet was that of Mrs. Eldridge. Her throat had been slit, the wound gaping and raw. Blood soaked her clothes, her lifeless eyes staring blankly at the ceiling. No, I said, shaking my head. What have you done? He stepped toward me, his hands covered in blood. It's the only way to keep you safe, he said. Don't you see? The house needs blood. It doesn't care whose. If I give it hers, it won't take you. I backed away, my mind racing. You've lost your mind, I said. Maybe, he said, his voice calm. But at least you'll live. Chapter 6, The Final Stain. I no longer knew how much time had passed since we arrived at Carrington Manor. Days and nights blurred into each other, marked only by the constant, oppressive presence of the house and the steady rise of violence. Sleep was a distant memory. Fear had taken its place. The house whispered to me, calling me by name now, as though I belonged to it. And perhaps I did. Lucas had changed. I saw it in the vacant look in his eyes, the way his movements were no longer entirely his own. He had become a puppet, a hollowed-out shell carrying out the house's will. Or perhaps he always had been, and I had simply refused to see it. The morning after Mrs. Eldridge's murder, I found him in the basement again. He was kneeling before the altar, his hands dripping with blood. There was another body there, a man I didn't recognize, his lifeless face twisted in terror. Lucas, I said, my voice trembling. He didn't look at me. It's almost over, he said. One more, and the house will be satisfied. One more, and it will let you go. His words hit me like a blow. Let me go. I repeated. What about you? He turned to me then, and the look in his eyes was one of resignation. I can't leave, he said. I'm part of it. I always have been. No, I whispered, shaking my head. We'll leave together. We'll find a way. There is no way, he said, his voice flat. The house won't let me go. But you can still escape. I wanted to believe him, to believe that there was a way out of this nightmare, but deep down I knew the truth. The house had already claimed me, just as it had claimed him. That night, the blood came again, but this time it wasn't confined to the staircase. It spread through the entire house, seeping through the walls and pooling on the floors. The air was thick with the stench of iron, and the whispers had turned into screams. I wandered the halls, my flashlight flickering as the shadows seemed to move around me. The house was alive, its hunger palpable. I could feel it watching me, waiting for me to make my move. When I reached the parlor, I found Lucas standing by the fireplace. His hands were clenched at his sides, and his face was pale and drawn. It's time, he said. Time for what? I asked, my voice shaking. He turned to me, and the look in his eyes sent a chill down my spine. The final sacrifice, he said. You have to kill me, Amelia. The words hung in the air, heavy and suffocating. No, I said, backing away. There has to be another way. There isn't, he said, his voice firm. The house demands blood, and if it doesn't get mine, it will take yours. You've seen what it can do. You've seen what it is. You know I'm right. I shook my head, tears streaming down my face. I can't, I whispered. I can't do it. You have to, he said, stepping closer. It's the only way to end this. The only way to break the cycle. I looked into his eyes, searching for some sign of the man I had married. But all I saw was despair. Please, he said, his voice breaking. Do it for me. Do it for yourself. The knife was heavy in my hand, its blade glinting in the dim light. I stood before Lucas, my entire body trembling. He knelt on the floor, his head bowed, waiting for the final blow. I'm sorry, I whispered, my voice barely audible. He looked up at me, a sad smile on his lips. It's okay, he said. I love you. I raised the knife, my hands shaking uncontrollably. The house seemed to hold its breath, the whispers falling silent as though waiting for what was to come. And then I brought the knife down. The blade sank into his chest, and he let out a choked gasp. Blood poured from the wound, soaking his shirt and pooling on the floor. His body convulsed once, then went still. I fell to my knees, the knife slipping from my hand. My vision blurred with tears as I stared at his lifeless body, my mind struggling to process what I had done. The house groaned, a deep guttural sound that reverberated through the walls. The bloodstains began to recede, the whispers fading into silence. For a moment, I thought it was over. But then I felt it. A cold, suffocating presence wrapped around me, tightening like a vice. The air grew thick, and the shadows seemed to close in. The house wasn't done with me. I don't remember how I ended up on the staircase, but I found myself standing on the fifth step, the same step where the blood had first appeared. The whispers returned, louder and more insistent, filling my ears with their sinister chorus. And then I saw her. Margaret stood at the top of the staircase, her hollow eyes fixed on mine. She smiled, a cruel, twisted grin that sent a shiver down my spine. "You thought you could break the cycle," she said, her voice dripping with malice. "But the house always wins." I tried to move, to run, but my feet were rooted to the spot. The blood returned, seeping through the wood and soaking my shoes. "You belong to us now," Margaret said, her voice echoing in my mind. The last thing I saw was her face, contorted with rage and triumph, as the house swallowed me whole. When they found the house months later, it was nothing more than a crumbling ruin, overgrown with weeds and vines. There was no sign of me or Lucas, no bodies, no blood. But the staircase remained intact, its fifth step stained crimson. And at night, if you listen closely, you can still hear the whispers. The house is waiting. It always is.